Hi, welcome to the Property Patter podcast. Today we're talking about commercial rental arrears recovery and where we are 5 years on after it was introduced in 2014. I'm Peter Lavaggi, a partner in the Property Litigation Department, but I've got Mark Mooney, who is the Managing Director of County Enforcement, one of the leading bailiffs in the country, in my opinion. Although, Mark, I should call you an enforcement agent now, shouldn't I?
Yes, that is our new name, so we've been upgraded from a bailiff to an enforcement agent.
To me, Mark, you will always be a bailiff, but enforcement agent it is. And I've also got Simon McElroy, who is a solicitor in the Property Litigation Department. So, commercial rental arrears recovery, CRA, replaced distress 5 years ago when the regulations came into force in 2014. Mark, what do you think about the progress of commercial rental arrears recovery over the last 5 years?
CRA, with it being a new process, obviously it's educating clients in the process of CRA, the additional steps which we've got to take, and also that it's now only commercial rent we can recover, and VAT we can recover. We're not able to recover obviously service charges and insurance with CRA now, and it's just educating the process for it. Obviously the notice of enforcement, issuing them the tenant or debtor seven clear days to make payment of those rents, and also then they've gotten a charge of £75 for the compliance fee stage as well.
Let's just go through the process very quickly in terms of what it applies to. Simon, can you just give us a rundown as to the process?
Yeah, so the really, as Mark was saying, things have changed quite a lot as against the old distress regime, and that came to be thought of as kind of anachronistic and a draconian remedy. There's now much more of a process. And at the start, before even thinking about exercising CRA, you need to make sure that you've got a debt which is due and payable under a written lease. It's, you can only enforce in relation to pure rent, service charge, insurance rent, so on doesn't count. And it's got to be commercial premises only. Assuming you meet all of those different tests, then you serve your 7 clear days notice of the intention to enforce. And I think, Mark, at that point you probably find that a lot of debtors will actually pay at that point, but assuming they don't, it's then on to the next step, attendance. And in terms of what Mark actually will then do when he attends the property, really got three main options. Actually impounding the goods on site, locking them up under key, taking the goods away, securing them elsewhere, or I think Mark will probably explain what often happens, parties enter into a controlled goods agreement, and they may even enter into some kind of installment plan.
So it's worth noting that landlords have a great advantage in that they're the only creditor that is able to use the process just outlined by Simon without a court order. Every other creditor needs to go to court first and either obtain a high court judgment or a county court judgment, and only then can they instruct an enforcement agent like Mark to go and enforce the debt by seizing goods. Landlords can use an enforcement agent with no court order, no judgment, providing the premises and the lease qualifies as a commercial tenancy, as Simon says, and there are goods on site which are worth enforcing against. Mark, in terms of starting the process then, one of the big changes which was introduced in 2014 is that you now have to serve this warning notice, a 7-day warning notice. What effect do you think that's had on the process?
The effect it's had is obviously it delays an enforcement agent attending, but it does give the opportunity for the tenant to make payment of the rent arrears with a £75 compliance fee stage. So the cost to the tenant have dramatically reduced. That part of the process, say in my eyes, does benefit say both the landlord and the tenant. It gives him more notice, and also you've got the landlord and tenant relationship you've still got to adhere to, because even though an enforcement agent company will be instructed, that tenant is still could have a 10-15 year lease, so it's an ongoing issue and concern which they've got. So you've still got to think of the relationship between a landlord and a landlord's tenant. When notice enforcement is issued, some tenants will play games with it as such, so they will wait for a landlord to send out their notice or their warning letter again for 7 days payment. Then obviously it then come past ourselves, so you're looking between 2 to 3 weeks after the call to date before the tenant's even been instructed or chased for their arrears. So it does delay obviously cash flow coming back into the landlord, and tenants unfortunately do play those games.
And do you find that one of the big fears about the new rules when they came in was that going back to the old law of distress, it was a complete ambush. So what used to happen, a landlord would literally pick the phone up to Mark, and Mark could actually go and attend the premises within hours. No warning, no notice, a bailiff at the door, levying distress for rent, and the whole process was very, very quick and very dramatic. Now, of course, you have to serve a 7-day notice. And the big fear was that the element of ambush was then removed and maybe tenants would abscond or take valuable assets out from sight. Has that been the problem that everyone thought it was going to be, Mark?
Yes, yeah. There has been, obviously, by notifying the tenant, they've got 7 days to make payment. You've also given them over 7 days to abscond, to move, or put other remedies in place to stop any enforcement actions. But obviously, an argument would be the tenant standing behind a locked door. Obviously, an enforcement agent attending can't force entry against that. With the new Act, you're able to make a court application to force entry.
That's a great point, by the way, a great point. Because now you can actually go to court, can't you? Is that what you do? And you get an order that you can actually use reasonable force to enter the premises.
Yeah, correct. So, but also, if you feel you've got a tenant who is going to respond if you issue a notice of enforcement, you can also have the notice period time frame reduced by making a further application to court to either completely disarray the notice of enforcement so you don't have to serve it, or you can reduce the time frame that it's the tenant's got to make payment into either a matter of hours or effectively an enforcement agent attending straight away to take control of goods.
Yeah, so there are dramatic and quick ways of actually following through on the commercial rental risk recovery process if you hit those hurdles.
Yep, so if you come across it's knowing your tenant, knowing your landlord and advising the best way to act forward. If you're coming across tenants where they've got, which we come across on a daily, where a tenant will be the leaseholder, all the assets are owned by another company, so you can't take in control of any goods. And we're finding what they're doing is they're coming up new ways of trying to defeat enforcement agents and can take control of goods. But obviously what that's then doing is then pushing the line down to the forfeiture routes instead of collecting and taking control of goods on the ground.
So Simon, in terms of the relationship between the ability of a landlord to exercise commercial rental risk recovery, use the enforcement agent after the service of the notice, what's the relationship between that and forfeiting a lease?
I mean, put simply, it's either or. So if you exercise CRA, obviously what you're doing is you're exercising essentially your right under the lease to recover the debt. So you're acknowledging the continuing existence of the lease, and that is what we call the waiver of the right to forfeit. There are caveats to that. For instance, most leases will say that the right to forfeit only arises 21 days after the rent fell due. So if you start the CRA process in that 21 day period, then actually as a landlord you're okay, you preserve the right to forfeit later.
But you can still forfeit after the 21 days has expired. Yeah.
There are other nuances to that as well. For instance, some breaches of lease are what's called continuing breaches of lease. So you waive the right to forfeit, but then the right arises again the next day. But the basic point is, and there was a case in 2018 confirming this, that exercise of CRA does waive the right to forfeit.
Yeah. So let's just be very clear about that. You will waive the right to forfeit if you exercise CRA, unless you exercise CRA during that, let's say, 21 grace period that most leases allow for the payment of rent before the right to forfeit arises.
That's right.
So timing can be very, very important in terms of when you exercise commercial rental arrears recovery.
Absolutely. And I think, but for most landlords, it's just also the fundamental question of, do you want the property back? If you want the property back, then forfeiture is going to be your best remedy, obviously. If you don't, then CRA is still an extremely powerful remedy.
And actually, that's a great way of looking at it. So if you were going to prepare some kind of flow diagram of what a landlord should consider if you've got a defaulting tenant, the starting point has to be, do you want the property back? And if your priority is to get the property back and forfeit, then only exercise CRA if it's that grace period time. Otherwise, CRA waives the right to forfeit. But if you don't necessarily want the property back and you just want to enforce and you want to try and recover as much of the debt as you can, then it's all about instructing Mark or someone like Mark as soon as possible and get that notice served to give the 7 days notice. Mark, how does the process continue? So once you've served the notice, what happens next?
So obviously once on the notice, it'll state when the tenant or debtor's got to pay the funds over, including what the total charges and interests are. If the tenant then fails to make payment or negotiate into a paying plan, then it will be allocated to an enforcement agent, which obviously the enforcement agent will then attend the property. But also then the tenant or debtor will then incur fixed stage fees on that, and also the calculated fees. So it's now starting to more financially incur the tenant further debts. Obviously when attending the property.
So that's an incentive for the tenant to pay to avoid those extra costs.
Yeah, so one thing which will be on the notice of enforcement, it will state in clear writing what the next stage fees will be throughout the whole entire process. So we are keeping the tenant up to date that if they fail to make payment within the time frames which have been given, these are going to be the next stage fees which they will incur, which is something which never happened in distress. So the tenant is fully aware of what the situation he's getting into, and also the additional financial constraints is going to be against them with the additional fees that's going to be incurred by them.
And Mark, I think we've touched upon this, but let's just be comprehensive about it. What can you take on site?
So taking on site, you can only seize assets obviously which are owned by the tenants.
That's an important part of this, isn't it? It's only the debtors, the tenants' assets.
Only the debtors' tenants. It's something which unfortunately the landlords and bailiffs have lost, where previously any bailiff could seize any assets on the property in distress, pre-act, under reputed ownership, beneficial interest, which is a brilliant tool for a bailiff to take control and seize goods.
I remember those days where literally you took every single thing on site and, you know, there was very limited protection for third-party owners. But that's now gone, so it has to be owned. Now it has to be actually owned by the tenant.
Yeah, it has to be owned by the tenant. Obviously, you've got working tools of up to $1,350, which is a limit. So previously, you had tools of trade. Many tools of trade you couldn't take, but now there's a limit on that. So anything above the value of £1,350, you can now take and take control. So you've got a benchmark to what that is now. So it's a lot clearer in what can be taken now to what can't be taken, which is good. And obviously, the steps in taking control of goods is removing the goods from the property. Further on, it will be impounding them on the property, so you'll be immobilising the assets on site and changing the locks, or issuing, which is generally the most used tool, and that's entering into controlled goods agreement, where that'll be an agreement between the debtor and the enforcement agent on an arrangement plan over the next coming weeks or months or to pay off the outstanding arrears.
And that's kind of like, I guess, a contract between the enforcement agent and the tenant, where the tenant promises to pay, and meanwhile the goods stay on site subject to your controls and enforcement agent, Mark. I think that's correct, isn't it?
Yep.
Under a controlled goods agreement. Just turning to the type of premises, Simon, one of the things which people talk about a lot in relation to commercial rental arrears recovery is where you have a tenancy which has a residential element. Do you want to just cover that off for us?
Yes, so this is one of the main changes as against the old distress regime. And now you have to be very careful that you are only dealing with pure commercial premises. And that involves looking at the lease and making sure that residential use is not permitted under the terms of the lease. Because if it is, even if it's not actually being used that way, CRA isn't an option. And in the old days, you would often find that with a ground floor shop with flats above, all on the same lease, landlords would exercise distress and just make it clear to the person above that they were unaffected. Now that's gone, and really, if a landlord wants to anticipate this issue, as in it wants to have the right to exercise CRA if their tenant falls into arrears, what they need to do is make sure that they grant separate leases of any residential part and of the commercial part.
And Mark, do you find that's a problem, this requirement of that the premises has to be purely commercial with no residential element? Is that a practical problem?
Yeah, it's...
We all thought it was going to be a problem, but I remember when the regulations came in and the Act came in, we all thought this was going to be a major issue, which a game-changing issue, I suppose.
It's a game-changing issue, but it's then educating your clients. I think that's the biggest hurdle for us, is educating the clients of what we now cannot do to what we previously could do. And then obviously going through the leases and checking, can the landlord execute CRA on that? It's definitely a big concern moving forward, because if the landlord does instruct and they do state that it's a wholly commercial lease and then enforcement agents do attend, then obviously they're in breach of that.
Yeah. Are there any other tips you would like to give in relation to CRA generally, Mark, before we bring this to an end?
Tips? It's
general tips as to how landlords should proceed in relation to commercial rental risk recovery.
At the end of the day, it's an asset of the landlords. They need to protect that asset. If they are to enter into any payment plans, then they need to consider what other creditors, if the tenant is in financial arrears with the landlords, then what other arrears are they in? What other creditors are going to be executing against them? Last thing a landlord wants is an empty property. So it's a case of instructing an enforcement agent to carry out an exercise CRA against the tenant, but also you're working alongside of the tenant to facilitate any payment plans and protect the tenant under a control of goods agreement. So no other executing creditor can then come in and seize those assets and close the business down effectively.
Yeah, and also it's a great advantage should the tenant then become insolvent and go into a formal insolvent structure like administration or liquidation. We should always remember that commercial rent arrears recovery gives a kind of security. Once that notice is served, the goods are bound pursuant to the notice. Simon, do you also want to reflect on that, finally?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of when we're advising our landlord clients, that is something that's easily missed. But actually, once you have served your notice of the intention to exercise CRA, you have actually protected yourself if the tenant then becomes insolvent, even immediately thereafter. And so it's not just a case of, well, hoping that there are sufficient goods on the premises to actually satisfy the debt. You also, even if the tenant absconds, becomes insolvent, you've done something which gives you some real legal protection. And so in that way, it can be preferable to, for instance, just serving a statutory demand, which doesn't give you any prior ranking with, as against other creditors. And in my experience, it's also something which will not necessarily make a tenant sit up and pay attention quite as much as a threat of the exercise of CRA.
And once again, it's only landlords that have this right. You know, all other creditors have to go through the court process to be put on the same level as commercial landlords. Commercial landlords have this special right to go straight to an enforcement agent and embrace this commercial rent arrears recovery process. Mark, occasionally, do you find that tenants actually exploit the system by using commercial rent arrears recovery to actually delay payment? How does that work?
Yeah, definitely. But it's obviously the landlord will obviously request the demand of the rents. So already ranked in period between 7 to 14 days in arrears already after the course stage due. Then obviously they're going to issue a notice to enforcement. But we find a lot of the high streets, the tenants will play the game with it. Is if you're sitting there, you've got 100 hostels across the country, and you're considering working out each landlord to what the total rental arrears are, and you can facilitate and go, right, we're going to hold off payment of this property on that property moving forward. It's
buys a bit more time, I guess, does it?
Yeah, correct. So it buys more time. If you've got a large portfolio of premises and you think of the rental demands which are due out, if they can withhold onto that money for a matter of days or even a couple of weeks, especially as a £75 compliance fee charge, it's a very, very cheap overdraft facility. But unfortunately, they're using the landlords as that. Instead of going to the banks and reimbursing the landlord with the to paying off the rent, they're now using landlords as an overdraft facility moving forward, which obviously is then detrimental to the landlord, especially if you've got a pension trust, which an individual landlord which have only got this one property and they are reliant on the last landlords which have got mortgages on the premises as well.
So tenants actually almost inviting an enforcement agent approach just to buy extra time to pay the rent at a relatively cheap price. Well, that's been a really interesting chat about commercial rental arrears recovery. I think it's here to stay. Do you agree?
Yep.
Do you both agree with that? So whilst the new Act is still being challenged and is still bedding in, and some landlords are taking time to realise how useful this remedy actually is, we are seeing a big increase in the use of commercial rental arrears recovery, and it's set to stay. Landlords have this special rights that no other creditors have, and it will be here for the future. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast.